No dairy, no sweets, only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school. My household smell like soul food, bruh. Curry falafel.
What's up, Beardos? Welcome to episode 43 of The Bearded Vegans. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes on The Commentist Network at thecommentist.com. And you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's episode, we will find out where in the world Andy is, check out some vegan news, and then answer the question of the week, which is being vegan easy? I don't know. We'll find out.
Stay tuned. Paul, before you ask me where I have been, we have an announcement to make.
Do we?
Normally, yeah, we do. Normally, for those hardcore beardos who actually make it through to the end of every episode, you hear me announcing a list of Veg Fest that I will personally be at behind the Compassion Company table. But this one we're going to announce at the top of the episode because we will both be at a Veg Fest. And not only will we be there with Compassion Company, we will be recording a live podcast at this Veg Fest. And that means a podcast that is taped live and then released later. So it won't be streamed live or anything like that. But this is a first for us. And I think it's safe to say we're both very excited to do it. And you might be asking, what is that Veg Fest? It's called Veg Stock, and it's in Millville, New Jersey on September 10th. And we will post a link in the show notes to that event. But yeah, plan ahead. We would love to see some beardos come out. Who knows? There might just be like three people sitting there as we record, and it might be incredibly awkward. But I think we're both looking forward to it.
Oh, yeah.
Topic TBA.
But we'll definitely announce the topic beforehand so you can come loaded with your questions and accusations against us.
Perfect.
So now let's go on into our normal Bearded Vegan activities. So, Andy, where have you been?
Paul, I got to spend some time in Denver, Colorado.
Oh, and I know there's something special going on there.
There was a Veg Fest happening, and I'll talk about that in a second. But before I got to the Veg Fest, my very first stop in town was actually in Boulder, Colorado, at a Whole Foods, which contains the Beyond Burger Bar. And ooh, this is a burger that we talked about previously on the show. It's from Beyond Meat. It is being sold in the meat section. And Paul and I had differing feelings on that placement. Personally, I'm all for it. I think what they're doing is great. But they actually sell it in the store in, like, the meat section. I did walk by, and I found it and actually talked to someone who, like, just minutes prior was packing up from their sampling. So I didn't get to sample it in that fashion. But they have the Beyond Burger Bar, which is, like, just a counter that's inside of the Whole Foods and has this extensive vegan menu. And they actually just added a breakfast section as well to the menu, which has like 10 or 12 options, including like lemon pancakes with Kite Hill ricotta. Ooh. And a breakfast sandwich that has the Follow Your Heart vegan egg and Beyond Meat sausage. And chow cheese is pretty much the cheese they're always using. So that's really exciting. But of course, I wanted to try that Beyond Burger because it's only in a few locations now. I believe it's just in Boulder and Washington, D.C. I heard rumblings soon to be New York City, but they're doing a real slow, dramatic rollout on this product. So, but everyone that I know that had tried it was really raving about it. So I thought I would give it a taste test. Paul, you love Beyond Meat.
I do.
You love their chicken. I think it's good. I don't think it's like as rave worthy as everybody else. So I was ready to be a naysayer on this burger. But let
good
me
old
tell
pessimist
you,
pessimist Andy.
Yes. Let me tell you, I thought that burger was fantastic.
Woo.
It was so good. It's supposed to be like the type of burger that my dad used to make in the backyard, which is like you're actually taking like a hunk of ground beef and kind of forming it with your hands and throwing it on the grill, and that big, thick, kind of juicy burger that you're used to getting like that. Not so much like a McDonald's, you know, hamburger, which is probably closer to what you get if you're getting the Beast Burger with the original burger, mm-hmm, that Beyond Meat put out. But this thing, the flavor was it was like creepy how much it tasted like what I remember those burgers tasting like. Yeah. The texture was really good. It came with a slice of, they had actually run out of the chow cheese, and I think they're using the Follow Your Heart pepper jack. So just the whole package was really good. So I'm excited for it. I think that if you were to take this burger, a stack of them, and bring them to a barbecue, and that was like the only burger that was available, and you didn't tell anybody there, and it was a bunch of non-vegans, I don't think anyone would eat that and complain. I don't think anyone would eat that and think that something was up with the burger.
Awesome.
Of course, if you tell someone this is a vegan burger, then obviously, you know, the preconceptions start going and they might nitpick some things. But I think if you just gave it to someone and said, hey, here's a burger, I think most people would be very satisfied with it.
Hey, Andy.
Yes, Paul.
Would you say that you got this at the Beyond Burger Bar in Boulder?
The Beyond Burger Bar in Boulder. It was a beautiful burger.
Oh, I love you, Andy.
Yes. good old Droopy Dog, third co-host. Doesn't have much of a beard, but... Anyway, Droopy Dog also approved of the burger. That was the Beyond Burger in Boulder, Colorado. And then Denver is a city that I like for food, and I feel like maybe I have a more inflated sense of how much I like it than I actually do, because I had a couple disappointing, underwhelming experiences while I was there. But the other place that I do want to mention is Sitio City, which is I believe it's vegetarian. I don't think they serve any meat there, with like a ton of vegan options as well.
Cool.
And... they kind of do stuff that's like, you know, lentil loaf with mashed potatoes and gravy served on a giant pretzel, like that type of thing, where it's just like really ridiculous combos of food, not in like everything they do, but a lot of what they do. And so this was after the Veg Fest had finished on the final day, and I was like, I'm just going to get this nice breakfast sandwich. It's called the all-day breakfast sandwich, and it has tofu scramble, French fries, hot sauce aioli, and then a house-made ricotta or dea. I had them mix them, make both, on a toasted pretzel bun. And this thing came out, and it was like they killed a monster in the back and just, like, threw it on a plate. It was this giant, giant sandwich, and you can see a picture of that on our Instagram, which is just The Bearded Vegans, obviously. And it was so big, I couldn't even finish the whole thing. but Sitio City, I've never been disappointed by that place. So shout out to Sitio City for providing a huge pile of food for a decent price.
Nice.
And speaking of the Colorado Veg Fest, couple Beardos stopped by. So thank you to Nick and Allison for popping over to the Compassion Company table and chatting with me for a bit. Always awesome to see listeners in person. And the only thing I'll mention from the fest that I thought was fantastic, because I didn't get to try too much, is a company called The Honest Stand. And they make cheeses, like cheese sauces that come in a jar. Hmm. And they had this nacho cheese that was out of this world good. It was cool. Amazing. And I did not buy a jar at the fest, but I did go over to Nooch, which is the all-vegan market in Denver. And I picked it up from that place. And everyone that works there is the nicest. So... definitely, if you're in Denver or passing through, go to Nooch and get all your vegan needs, because they're awesome.
That's awesome.
And it's funny, I was actually talking to the owner of Nooch at the fest, and she was saying that a lot of people there at the fest did not realize that Nooch was like a resource for them in Denver. And it always kind of blows my mind if I was vegan in a town, I wouldn't know that they had an all-vegan market. So.
Yeah.
Use that happy cow, everyone. Even if you live somewhere for a while, pop open that happy cow. You might find something interesting.
As usual, I am extremely jealous of all the places you've been. I have been absolutely nowhere.
Oh, Paul.
So with that kind of sad acknowledgement, let's go on into the vegan news. So the first piece of news is from from July 25th, which right now is just a few days ago, but it's an article I found on Oregon Live, or Oregon Live. Those two words are pronounced the same, or spelled the same, so I don't know which one it is, but it's from OregonLive.com, and it's and it is titled Pip's Original Donuts Lands in Hot Water for Vegan-Free Hiring Practices. And basically, there's this popular donut shop in Portland that has kind of found itself in a little bit of a scandal after they posted their job listing and listed that they were looking for a new barista that had to be friendly, outgoing, and they couldn't have any non-medical, non-religious dietary restrictions. So that excludes vegans and vegetarians. And people have been kind of, they've been getting a lot of like hate mail of people saying like, oh, how could you discriminate in your hiring practices? Like vegans and vegetarians, like, especially they were saying, because I wasn't quite sure. It seemed like they may not have any vegan options. I'm sure most of their donuts are vegetarian. I think I read that they have, they serve bacon. So it's like not everything is vegetarian, but the non-vegetarian thing seems odd to me because I would assume that a vegetarian would be able to eat most of what's in a donut shop. But, so yeah, a lot of people have been kind of, saying how this is unfair, and the co-owner actually like released a statement following all this backlash, and he said, at Pip's, we serve dishes that contain meat, gluten, and most other common food allergies like soy, dairy, and nuts. It is our responsibility to let potential employees know that they will be expected to taste the food and drinks we prepare in order to maintain both food quality and food safety. If a potential employee is not able to perform these duties because of a voluntary, non-medical, and non-religious dietary restriction, no sugar, no gluten, no nuts, no meat, etc., working at our shop would place an undue burden on our ability to maintain the quality of our food and the health of our customers and employees. So that's basically the scoop. I thought it was very odd because, like, for instance, I have worked as a vegan. I have worked at a Froyo World before. This was when I was in college many years ago. And Froyo World has a couple vegan options, but I really don't feel like my ability to work there suffered because of the fact that I could not taste the majority of the food. I don't know. It just seems, is it weird to you, Andy? Like, it seems like that's not a, I didn't really know that that was a thing, that it's like, I guess it would be helpful if someone that's working at like a food establishment knows like about every single food that is served. But I don't know why, like, if someone couldn't eat something, they couldn't, like, the barista couldn't just get that information from another employee. Like, oh, this is what this, like, they can still describe what the food is. So it seems kind of weird. Like, you don't have every single one of your employees. Like, it's not like every time you go to serve an item of food, it's like the waiter is about to serve the food. And then they're like, oh, wait a second. And they take a little nibble of it. And they're like, oh, okay, it's good. You can have it now. It's like, that's not a thing that happens. It's like once a dish is like established, it doesn't really need to be tested extensively by every single employee to kind of like uphold the standard of the food or the quality as this person said, to maintain the quality of the food. So I don't know. That seemed kind of weird to me.
Yeah, I get it. I feel like what the owners of this place want is totally reasonable. I don't think that if like this was the only job in an area for someone and this was like the difference between life and death, you know, and they had to get this job or they were going to die or something horrible was going to happen, I don't think that person should be barred from getting the job. But if I was a business owner, I would want employees that could taste the food and recommend things to people. Now, a donut shop is like, it seems like people are like, I know what Boston cream tastes like. I know what maple, you know, it feels like it's not really that crucial for what they're doing. But for instance, I think about, Mia's Sushi, which is one of both of our favorite places to eat, and how, you know, a big part of being a server there is being able to recommend things to people. And I love that place, and I could recommend the heck out of all of their, like, vegan options. But if I was a server there, I feel like I would not be great because I could fake it. I could be like, oh, this one's highly recommended. Or I could even say, like, oh, this one's my favorite. You know, like, I'm sure I could be taught, you know, how to sort of recommend the things that aren't vegan if that was going to be, like, a necessary component of my job. But I think I would not be the best suited for that job if I was not willing to eat the food that is served at that restaurant. I think that this owner went about it in a wrong way. I think that they could have just in the interview been like, oh, just want to make sure you don't have any restrictions or allergies. Okay, noted. And then it's like, if someone, you know, like, I feel like they didn't need to put this out front that that was, like, their hiring practice. Or they could have said, it is highly preferable that people are able to, you know, but we have, of course, willing to consider people who are not able to if we think they'll be the right fit. Like, there's so many ways they could have gone about it that didn't make it seem like a strict ban on that, you know, those dietary restrictions. But from the business owner perspective, I totally understand why they would want people to be able to taste the food that is being served to customers.
I see what you're saying, but to play devil's advocate and to just give my opinion, so I guess not really playing devil's advocate, like, what the person said was that they did this because hiring a vegan employee would, quote, place an undue burden on our ability to maintain the quality of our food and the health of our customers and employees. Like, that's, I feel like that's something completely different than being able to recommend something. You know what I mean? It's like you could just look at a donut and be like, hey, there's a big, like, clump, there's a cockroach crawling around this donut, but I'm vegan, so I guess I don't know if this is healthy or not because I can't taste it. So here you go. Here's your cockroach donut.
Yeah, I think that those excuses are bullshit. And I think honestly, it's probably just because they don't want some annoying vegans in their shop. Like, truly, that's probably what it is.
Yeah.
I think that they're now trying to throw these, like, well, what about the health of our customers, to make it seem like there's more weight to this request than there really is.
Yeah.
But, you know, I totally understand why a business owner would want employees that partake in the food that they're serving. To me, that makes total sense. I don't think that maybe it should be legal to discriminate on those grounds or something, but it's almost just kind of like, whose time is it worth to, like, make this a thing? Like, who's going to, like, sue them for their inability to work for this donut shop? This is, of course, taking it to the extreme. The article did mention how it's not technically illegal what they're doing, you know? And to me, it's just kind of like, this is the thing that people are spending their time getting upset about. I know people can get upset about multiple things at a time, and it takes, you know, 5 seconds to write a Facebook angry message to this business. But to me, I feel like I totally understand why they would want people working there that eat the food that is served there. And it might be shitty that they don't want to hire a vegan, but I also, like, just couldn't care less that they don't want to hire a vegan.
Yeah,
you know, it's Portland. It's full of businesses that have jobs. So it's not like this is a town with, like, one donut shop, you know?
Yeah, this, I definitely, like you said, it does seem like maybe this is, like, a bigger deal to a lot of people than it should be. I feel like if I came across this, I would be like, well, this sucks. Like, that's a bummer. But I don't think I'd go much more than that. Like, just quickly looking through all the comments, there's a lot of, like, legal, illegal, like, talk being thrown around. And like you said, I feel like it probably doesn't need to be taken that far. So, yeah. That is our first piece of news. Possibly we are contributing to the fact that it is as big as a news story as I guess it's being taken as. But, oh, well. That's what we're here for.
Well, now that the millions of people who listen to our podcast know about this story, I'm sure the one-star Yelp reviews are going to come flooding in.
Exactly. And we'll get those same people that were attacking that gym owner in England to attack these people.
Yes.
So Callback. So the other piece of news is actually, like, I'm not really going to get into it, but it was a nice follow-up to last episode's discussion. So last episode, the topic of the week was, like, should vegans date non-vegans? And actually, in one of the articles that we are going to be talking about today, there was a little link to a different article, this one from ecorazzi.com, called If Veganism is a Moral Choice, Why Do Vegans Date Non-Vegans? And we're going to throw a link to this in the show notes, because here is kind of, I think, a different perspective from what we were saying and what a lot of the articles that we were looking at last week. And just for the sake of trying to be unbiased, in the sense of trying to be at the fork unbiased. Is that what that movie was called? At the Fork? I already forgot. That was like two episodes ago.
Yes, it was called At the Fork.
Okay. All right, cool. I'll just post this. We'll post this article in the show notes. But yeah, it's making the argument that vegans should only date vegans. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Did you want to add anything about that, Andy?
I mean, I feel like the article was mostly kind of taking the stance that I was taking, which was sort of in defense of vegans who choose to only date other vegans. But this one was taking it that sort of next step, saying not necessarily like you're a bad vegan if you don't date other vegans, but like that it's going to be just way easier for you and for your, you know, well-being and your mental health and all that stuff if you seek out other vegans to date. And sort of just discussing the things we were talking about, like, well, I wouldn't date someone that was like super openly, you know, racist. So why would I date someone that was super openly like for animal abuse or something like that?
Yeah.
So I understand that. I think it's just kind of taking it one step further to the side that I was kind of proposing, which is like, you know, in defense of if someone chooses to just date other vegans, I think that that's a totally acceptable lifestyle practice.
Yeah. And I will say about this article, it does kind of seem a little goofy to me that this article is written by someone who, it says, started dating a non-vegan and then that person turned vegan. And now in that situation, now they're saying like, oh, but you can only date vegans. It seems kind of like, I'm like, okay, like you, just because you're currently dating someone that's vegan, like, doesn't erase the fact that you started dating someone that was non-vegan.
Yeah, it's kind of like a do as I say, not as I do type situation.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll post that. And yeah, you can check that one out too. So with that being said, let's move on into the question of the week, which is being vegan easy? So I came across an article also from Ecorazzi. So this was the article that is then linked to that Ecorazzi article we were just talking about. It's from an article that is called BuzzFeed Makes Veganism Look Hard AF. And for all of you non-internet people, if you don't know what AF means, it's as frick. It's hard as frick. So
I thought it was fudge.
What's that? Fudge, hard as fudge. Yeah, because as we all know, fudge, you put it in the refrigerator, it gets very, very solid. It is a solid block of chocolatey goodness, so hard as fudge. So
especially what this if you put it in a freezer.
Especially if, yes, don't even get me started on putting fudge
then
in the freezer.
Then that fudge is hard as fudge.
Exactly. So, so what this article does is it posts this BuzzFeed video that was obviously posted on BuzzFeed titled "Can You Get Through One Day as a Vegan?" And essentially that the video just kind of, it has this kind of like goofy, dainty, like cheery music playing in the background, and it's like, can you make it through one day as a vegan? And it's like, look at all these choices you're gonna have to make. And it starts off with the person, it's like, you go to Starbucks and you order a coffee with soy milk. The barista puts out two identical looking coffee cups. Do you pick the one on the right or the one on the left? And then it's like, hope you pick the one on the left because the one on the right has milk in it. And it's like really, and that's like the whole thing is it's just going through the day and being like, you ordered fries. You don't know where these fries came from. Are they vegan? That's up to you to decide. You're wrong. They're definitely not vegan. And it's just I like
the fry example because it was like choose between onion rings and fries. Well, onion rings have eggs, so you got to get the fries, but you don't know what oil they were fried in. So even that, it's like, you know, a false choice that you have to make.
And then it says, and then it goes on to like, it's like, yeah, it says like, choose the onion rings or the fries. Like, hope you chose the fries, but wait, are they cooked in oil? While you were thinking about it, all your friends ate all the fries. That is literally what happens in this video. So it's really ridiculous.
It ends by saying like, well, I think the person let their friends eat the fries because they were not sure if they were vegan or not. But it does say something along the lines of like, were they vegan? You'll never know.
Yeah. It's like very ominous and intense. And, yeah. So the article on Ecorazzi is just kind of pointing that out. Like, okay, this is like a real goofy video. It's I like how the article says, first and foremost, I sincerely hope the average person isn't dining out for each and every meal of their day, which I thought was like, I think that's what Andy does.
I was sitting there going, oops.
But yeah, it kind of, the article is just kind of making it seem like it's like impossible to make these decisions, how tough it is. And when I was reading this article and looking at the video, I was like, huh, this would be something goofy to talk about. But then at the very last line of the Ecorazzi article, it says, don't believe it for a second. It's exceedingly simple to go vegan. And that's the kind of sentence that I wanted to dissect in this episode. Because I mean, obviously this video put out by BuzzFeed it's like over the top and it's like super over exaggerated, and it's really like the problems that this fictional person is facing, like for instance the barista not knowing which drink is yours. It's just stuff that, I mean, you know, you're not typically gonna face that in your day-to-day life of ordering coffee, but I wanted to get into the fact that they're making the claim that it is exceedingly easy to go vegan. And in that little sentence, it's exceedingly simple to go vegan, it's actually a link to a different website that is called howdoigovegan.com. And this is basically a website that is like giving you tips. It's explaining what veganism is, explaining how to be vegan. And it's actually, I think it's a pretty decent website. It does, if I were not vegan and I did not know much about vegan, it would seem very daunting to me. Because for instance, if you click on the tab from that website that says going vegan is easy, there's kind of this big list of, I mean, sort of big list of kind of things that you need to do. It says like adopt a vegan diet, stop wearing and using products made from animals, stop using animals for entertainment and other purposes. And then it's like, but what about personal care products? It's like toothpaste, shampoo, lotions, cosmetics, household cleaning products. It even though it's called Going Vegan is Going Easy, I feel like it is throwing a lot at a person at once. If this was the first kind of experience you had about like thinking about veganism, I don't know. What do you think about that, Andy?
I mean, I like the website overall. I think it's very comprehensive. Yeah. But I mean, I agree. So it's good to note that this is from abolitionistapproach.com. And so they have their very specific way of promoting veganism, as you know, veganism moral baseline. If you believe that animals have moral value at all, that means going vegan right this second. And they don't take they don't give any creed to baby steps or smaller moves. But I do think that in this instance, it might be good to have a statement, and maybe this is somewhere on the website. I didn't scour every inch of it, but I did not see it on the page that you sent me, Paul. That's like, hey, this might seem all overwhelming, but trust us. A lot of this becomes so easy with time. And it's okay if you don't get it all perfect on the first day. Do your best. Keep working on it. Keep striving to do as much as you can to get animal exploitation out of your life. I think a statement like that can go a really long way in terms of making people feel more at ease with the task that is at hand.
Well, I think it's funny you say that, because I think one of, like you said, this is a very comprehensive website, and we'll get into that in a second. But I think that the most important thing that this website does, like the biggest praise that I want to give this website, is that they have a tab called mentoring. And that's basically, from what it seems like, you can put in your name, your email, and you can kind of be paired up with a vegan mentor who's going to like guide you and help you out being vegan. And I think that, as we've talked about a billion times before, that's like one of the biggest, I think, pitfalls that a lot of vegan advocates fall into, is that they say, hey, you go vegan, it's easy, here's like a little pamphlet, all right, see you, you're vegan now, cool, all right, see you later, I'm gonna go talk to someone else. And they don't provide that kind of support. So I think that the mentoring aspect is awesome, and I think that's not something that I see enough of. But to kind of go back to what you were saying about like baby steps and stuff, it actually says on the mentoring tab, it says you don't need baby steps or journeys. On the contrary, these notions perpetuate the false idea that veganism is difficult and that justice to animals is about one's preferences. It's not. So I think that is actually kind of the opposite of the thing that you wanted to include, Andy. You were saying like you wanted to include something like, hey, it might not be easy for you, but you can do it. This is saying like, no, F you. Like, if you can't do it, like, you don't need baby steps to do this. You can just jump 100% into it. And there's like, you're weak if you can't just, if you need baby steps. Like, I feel like that's maybe, but besides what I was saying before, where it seems, I think it would seem overwhelming. Besides that, I think that those little couple sentences are the only things that were kind of like, I was kind of like, about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and so I guess that's kind of what we're here to talk about today is striking that balance between we want to inspire people to go vegan. And part of that means letting people know that they can do it. And I think sort of our inclination when we're trying to let people know that they can do it is to say it's so easy to do. And like, for me personally, having been doing it for 9 years, where it's just like the thing that I do, it's just like breathing. To me right now, I'm like, this is the easiest thing. And yeah. you hear vegans say that all the time. Why didn't I do this earlier? And like, everybody has that experience. And I do say that to people when I'm doing advocacy, like, you know, they'll be like, I could never give up this. And I'm like, hey, I said that too. But you know what? Everyone that is vegan used to say that. And everyone that goes vegan says they wish they did it earlier because they didn't realize that it was easier than they thought it would be. And it's like, you want that. But at the same time, you don't want to paint it as so easy that someone tries and then fails. And then they get this like backlash that's kind of this attitude from the website, which is like, you're saying like you're weak if you don't, you just do it overnight. And I find that a lot of the people that advocate for overnight did not necessarily do it overnight themselves. and the response is like, it does not matter how you did it. And if you advocate for overnight change and they decide to take smaller steps, that's like their decision. But for us to be morally consistent, we need to say that this is a thing that you need to do overnight. As soon as you recognize that animals have moral worth, that just means you go vegan right then and there, as long as you accept that animals are not mere things, that they are actual sentient beings. And like, I understand the need to be morally consistent in that approach, but just knowing that in my experience, and you know, from the people that I've talked to and the various approaches I've tried, you're way more likely to inspire people when you show understanding for their situation that they're in and show that empathy. And like, think back to when you went vegan and go, yeah, it was kind of a scary or confusing, maybe exciting time when you're figuring all this stuff out and you weren't sure if you'd be able to stick with it, maybe. And maybe you felt lonely, maybe you felt isolated, maybe your friends made fun of you. And I think that is the hard part of going vegan, is dealing with other people. We've talked about that on the show before. I'm sure we can get into that a little more later. But like understanding and recognizing that there are, that it's not the easiest thing in the world. And there's a statement on the website that I always kind of take issue with, even though I agree with it, but I feel like it's just another tool to like shame people that haven't like made the switch overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And the quote just says, going vegan is easy, especially when you focus on how much animals endure for our most trivial interests. And I remember, Paul, you and I did an interview on Hemingway's Heart, and the host asked us, how do you not cheat? And we were both just kind of like, well, you don't cheat on your ethics and your morals. And it, once you sort of internalize what happens to an animal, once you purchase an animal product or go see them for entertainment or whatever it might be, it's just really easy to not, you don't feel like that's something that you can cheat on. So it's like, I understand that mindset, but at the same time, it's basically just being like, you're selfish if you don't go vegan. And even though, hey, that I feel like that is true. Like if you think that an animal, your palate pleasure is worth more than an animal's life, I do believe that is selfish. But I also, we know that we're living in a time where it is 100% the social norm. And so if you're just painting everyone that you're trying to get over to, the vegan way of thinking as being these selfish, immoral, horrible people, even if that is a correct assessment, I don't necessarily believe that it is, but even if it was a correct assessment, portraying things in that manner is going to be a lot harder to get people over to the vegan way of thinking if that's all the messaging that they're getting from vegans.
Yeah. Yeah. That was very well put, Andy. I just noticed something on that. So I was praising a second ago that mentoring aspect of this website. And I still am. I still think that that is something that needs, that should happen if we want to not only create new vegans, but keep new vegans. At the bottom of that, it says, important, please note that we do not offer medical advice. That makes sense. They're not like having all these doctors doing this. But it then says, moreover, this one-on-one assistance on the practical aspects of going vegan is intended for those who already have a basic knowledge of the abolitionist approach to animal rights developed by Professor Gary L. Francione and understand that veganism is a moral imperative. We also recommend that you take a look at all the sections of this website before contacting a vegan mentor. If you're trying to, like, if your whole position of a website is, like, veganism is easy, don't say, like, you have to go read a book before you are even able to, like, participate in this website. I feel like that's, like, who, like, if you're not super sold on veganism, like, who's going to want to go and, like, read an entire book about it before they're even, like, quote, allowed to, participate in this? I thought that was kind of, like, a strange thing. Like, I feel like you should recommend it if that's what you think is going to be helpful, but don't say, like, this is intended for those who already have a knowledge of this. I feel like that's kind of a weird thing to do.
Yeah, and I mean, something that I have learned in my advocacy is you're going to get the same question over and over and over and over and over again. And, three words into their question, you know exactly what they're going to say, every possible response. But it's important that you don't make them feel like they're boring you with their questions. Mm-hmm. It's important that you sort of treat it like it's the first time you've ever heard that question, and it's a really good question. And that's a really good question. Yeah, like, I wonder, where do we get our protein? Things like that. It's like, it's important to do that because you want to be engaging. So, I feel like if you're willing to take on the mentorship role, that means that you're willing to just answer the same mundane questions over and over and over again with as much enthusiasm as you can possibly muster. And so that is a little off-putting to be like, read the whole website first. And I get it. I'm sure it's very annoying to get the same question over and over again when that answer is just sitting there right in front of you on the website that they contacted you from. I am a big fan of people Googling stuff and figuring it out when they can easily find it. But at the same time, if you're going to offer that program, it does seem like a little off-putting. I mean, the whole thing is, this sort of approach seems a little like gatekeeperish, like you can enter the club, but only if you do this thing. Whereas I guess I would like to see people being way more enthusiastic about anyone that shows any interest in veganism whatsoever. Like, we welcome all questions, like, please feel free to contact the mentor program or something like that. Certainly would seem more welcoming to me.
And it also, I think they're definitely, like, I wonder how they would react if someone contacted this mentoring program and was like, hey, I'm thinking about going vegan because of health reasons. Like, part of me feels like they're, from some of the tone of the website, they would be like, no, we're not going to mentor you because you're not doing it for the right reason. Because it specifically says, like, you can reach out to an abolitionist vegan mentor. Like, I feel like, why wouldn't they just say you can reach out to a vegan mentor? I just kind of feel like that the a lot of the phrasing is, like you said, it's very like gatekeeper-ish. And it's like, if you're not doing this for the right reasons, which are the reasons that we're doing it for, then we are not going to help you.
Yeah, yeah. Although now I feel like we're getting a little too bogged down in sort of criticizing this one website's specific approach.
Yeah.
But I agree with your criticisms, but I think maybe we should get back on track with, like, how do we, you know, is going vegan easy? How do we present this issue to non-vegans?
No, Andy, we're going to bash this website to the ground. but yeah, the last thing I'll say about this website is, like I mentioned before, it is extremely comprehensive, and I want to give them kudos for that. There's a tab for nutritional stuff. There's a tab for recipes. There's a tab for product guide, which gives like a lot of different, like companies and other organizations that provide like clothing, food, like household items, kids stuff. It's awesome. They even include, did you notice, Andy, the Legustas luscious chocolates as part of their recommendations, which I thought was nice.
I did not notice that, but yeah. I had a long talk with the folks at Nooch Vegan Market about Legustas luscious and how good it is. So always happy to see them being recommended.
And Fanciful Fox is also recommended.
Nice.
So yeah, this is an incredibly, even though we just spent like 20 minutes really nitpicking it, I think overall this is an incredibly comprehensive website, and the kind of approach that they have, I think, is, although like we just mentioned a few criticisms, overall I would probably send people to this website.
Yeah, I mean, I do just really appreciate how straightforward it is. And that is something that sort of the abolitionist approach in general is like, people are smart, people can figure it out, you don't need to baby them, even though I do believe that smaller steps can be helpful. That's me speaking, not them. Just give people the information and they are smart and they will be able to make the decision and make the transition themselves. So I do like that the website is like, here is all of the information, here you go, this is what you need. So I do like that. But I was going to say, so you and I have a pretty similar life experience and, you know, we're both straight white guys. And so for us, I feel like we have our own perspective on what it means to say vegan is easy. And we probably think about that in terms of, we are talking to our friends and family and often people who are in similar situations as ourselves. And I actually used to make a button that says, go vegan, it's easy. And then I stopped because I, you know, was kind of reading about the struggles that a lot of people do have for going vegan in situations other than the one that I am in. So I think maybe we should sort of touch on that as well.
Like, a good place to start with this is one of Andy and my favorite vegan organizations, which is the Food Empowerment Project. Which I think does a lot to expose issues pertaining to veganism that a lot of the mainstream organizations and just vegans in general don't really either want to talk about, they're not knowledgeable about, or don't talk about, because it does kind of poke holes in some arguments that people make, such as go vegan, it's easy. And so the Food Empowerment Project can be found at foodispower.org. And I would recommend everyone just go and peruse that entire website. But the one of the main pages that I wanted to talk about was their discussion on food deserts. And I feel like I'm not just going to assume that everyone knows what a food desert is. So this is a little paragraph from the Food Empowerment website about food deserts. It says, food deserts can be described as geographic areas where residents' access to affordable, healthy food options, especially fresh fruits and vegetables, is restricted or non-existent due to the absence of grocery stores within convenient traveling distances. For instance, according to a report prepared for Congress by the Economic Research Service of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, about 2.3 million people, or 2.2% of all U.S. households, live more than 1 mile away from a supermarket and do not own a car. The other defining characteristic of food deserts is socioeconomic. That is, they are most commonly found in communities of color and low-income areas where many people don't have cars. Studies have found that wealthy districts have three times as many supermarkets as poor ones do, that white neighborhoods contain an average of four times as many supermarkets as predominantly black ones do, and that grocery stores in African American communities are usually smaller with less selection. So I think this is an important issue to bring up, because when we say, hey, veganism is easy, to someone that is living in a food desert, I think they would quickly respond with, okay, like, show me all the foods that you eat on a typical day. Yeah, I don't really have access to many of those foods, or like the healthy options that you are telling me that I should be investing in.
Usually the typical vegan response to that is like, well, rice and beans are cheap and frozen vegetables are cheap. And I find that the people that say that are usually not people that would be willing to just eat seasoned rice and beans and like some frozen broccoli every day for every meal. It's usually people that aren't practicing that and not acknowledging how like mundane and like boring and horrible eating kind of the same thing, same protein every day can be. Not that the average American doesn't eat pretty much, you know, close to the same thing. They probably have like five different meals that they make at home or mm-hmm. whatever it might be, or like the one or two restaurants they go to. But it's like, it's just, if you are not personally doing it and you're like, oh, well, you're just making an excuse. All you got to do is eat rice and beans. Those are cheap. It feels like really dismissive and not really in line with, you know, showing empathy for those that we're trying to reach.
Yeah, and I think another kind of tab on the Food Empowerment Project website is talking about fast food, which I feel like this conversation leads into the fact that fast food, which is overwhelmingly non-vegan, is the food that is most accessible, like, say, in these food deserts, or like shopping at a convenience store or a corner store is going to be the thing that's most accessible to people. And you're really not going to be able to get the healthiest or vegan options at these sorts of places.
Definitely. And I think that, you know, there's always the accusations of veganism is a white people thing. And until we as a community start to acknowledge these obstacles, I think we're not doing ourselves any favors. You know, obviously it's important, I think, to speak to who you're going to be a credible messenger to. And that means speaking to people within your demographic. But it's also important to acknowledge that these other things do come up and to not paint those that do live with these obstacles as being lazy or they don't care about animals or any of those things that are kind of hurled at people that are in difficult situations, for not going vegan, you know, coming from people who live around the corner from a Whole Foods. Paul, talking to you.
Guilty.
But, you know, it's like, if we want to have an inclusive vegan movement, which is a more effective vegan movement, because we want everyone to be vegan, then that means acknowledging these obstacles and then also finding ways to work around those obstacles. And I guess more importantly, supporting the people that are already doing that work like, you know, Pet Foods in Baltimore, for instance, or people that are working with community gardens or whatever it might be that the people within those communities are doing to try and combat those issues, lending our support to those folks more so than us kind of going in and be like, well, you just need this. You just need a farmer's market and you'll be okay. Or you just need to care about animals more. You just need to focus on the animal's pain and then everything will be okay. Right now you're just focused on yourself because you're selfish. You know, all that rhetoric is, in my opinion, not really helping anyone.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. And definitely check out the Food Empowerment Project website, foodispower.org. We'll include the links, obviously, but it does kind of include, it's, I would say, very heavily research based. So it includes like references for all like the kind of stats and facts that they're including. But then it also includes like suggestions about what you can do, like if you live in a food desert and what you can do to try and kind of figure out a way that you can get access to better food. Definitely check that out. And so the last kind of article that I wanted to bring up, I thought, I figured we'd end on kind of a, I think a kind of, I would say comically optimistic note, is from a website called raptitude.com. And the first, so I'm going to post two links from this website. The first one is an article titled Seven Reasons I Never Went Vegan. And Andy, I would like you to read out these seven reasons, and I'm going to give you my quick response to each of these, to each of these seven reasons. Go for it.
Okay. This has not been planned or rehearsed. that's actually true. All right. Number one, it's too hard.
Well, we're talking about this. So skip number one. That's kind of the discussion about the whole episode. Skip number one.
Okay. Number two, it's too idealistic.
The person is basically just saying, like, you can't be the perfect human being, so why would you even want to try to be better in any way? So poo on that.
Three, vegans are angry.
Everyone's angry.
Okay. Four, I don't like PETA. I don't want to be one of those people.
Then don't.
Five, I don't want to ask the waiter 50 questions.
Ask one, is this vegan?
Six, the harvest of plants kills animals anyway.
Reference Bearded Vegans episode where we talk about this.
Seven, how could I ever say, okay, this is my last cheeseburger ever?
Like this. This is my last cheeseburger ever. And there you have it.
I love you.
But yeah, so basically this is an article from someone who was, not to give any kind of insight into what happens, but who was like very skeptical about veganism for these reasons that they listed, which are, I would say, for the most part, pretty typical responses about why people don't want to go vegan. But it seems like what this person does is kind of, he has this like bucket list where he does stuff, tries new things. So at the end of this article, it was updated, and it says, so this is obviously some point later on, he said, so none of my reasons really hold up for me anymore. Now, I'm not saying that my cheeseburger days are over for good or that I've seen the light, but it seems like now is the perfect time to tackle one of my life list items and eat a vegan diet for 30 days. I want to see what it does to my body, to my social interactions with others, to my wallet, and to my opinion of myself. After 30 days is up, I'll do whatever I see fit. Even just playing around with veganism feels like I'm opening an enormous can of worms. If I change the way I eat for ethical reasons, it means I must examine everything I do now. How can I hold my eating to an ethical standard, but not the rest of my life? The products I buy, the stores I shop at, the public figures I support, the charities I give to, the way I talk to people, the places I spit my gum out, and the way I dispose of my batteries. I think one of those things, not as important as many of the other ones, but okay. So that is this first article that was posted. It seems like, I'm going to guess 2011, February 2011.
Just off the top of your head, you're just going to guess 2011?
Well, looking at the link, there's a thing that says 2011 and there's this thing that says 02/7. So I'm going to guess, because I don't think it says it on the website, that this person posted this in February of 2011. That's what I am guessing. Or maybe, who knows. But the second article, which I would guess was posted in March of 2011, because there's an 03/2011 in the link, is titled, What I Discovered When I Went Vegan for 30 Days. And here are the kind of, he goes into every single one of them, but here are the kind of lists, here's the list of what he was discovered. He said, it wasn't hard. I ended up expanding the palette of foods I ate rather than restricting it. I felt awesome physically and right away. Reactions from others vary. Overall, food didn't cost any more, but spending more on food is a good thing anyways. And then the last one is vegans are generally not considered at all in the designing of menus, public and private. And I think it's important to note that one that he says, I felt awesome physically and right away. I think it's important to note that not that does not happen to everybody. I think it happens to many people. I actually felt a difference when I went vegetarian. And then 2 years later, when I went vegan, I didn't really feel much of a difference. But I think I typically don't, when I'm trying to promote veganism to other people, I typically don't say like, you're going to feel awesome right away the first day, or even at all, you're going to feel awesome. Because I feel like if the person doesn't feel better, they're going to say, okay, veganism doesn't work. I'm going to go back to doing what I did before.
Yeah.
And then the other one I wanted to clarify was when he said reactions from others vary. That is, he's talking about the reactions from other people who would ask him, like, when he would tell other people that he's vegan, what their reactions would be. So that's what he's talking about there.
I think we should add also the statement of overall food didn't cost any more, but spending more on food is a good thing anyway. It's kind of a privileged statement, and that kind of goes back to what we were saying about food deserts and all that jazz. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, definitely.
Clearly, this is the person with a certain level of privilege to be able to write that sort of thing. Even just to say spending more on food is a good thing, even though, you know, I'm an advocate of spending more for better quality or better ethics or any of that stuff. So it's, I guess it would be important to acknowledge the limitations of that kind of a statement.
Yeah. Thank you. I totally wanted to bring that up and it slipped my mind. Thank you, Andy, for catching that.
Cool. So yeah, I thought that was actually a really fun article to read. And I think that type of article would be helpful for certain people that are in the same situation as the author. Because like you said, those objections are just the most common objections you always hear. And I think it was really cool to read someone that was like bringing those up and like totally aware of how ridiculous some of them might sound, especially after actually trying it in hindsight. So very cool article. Thank you for bringing that to my attention, Paul.
Yep.
I think it's probably a good time to wrap it up. So like, what do you think are kind of the big takeaways of this conversation? If someone asks you, is going vegan hard? Or if someone says, is going vegan easy? Although you probably never get that question. How do you respond?
I think how I would respond and what my kind of takeaway after examining all these different things is that going vegan is going to be different for every single person. It's going to be a different level of difficulty for every single person, depending on like a bunch of different factors, what kind of position you're in. And how I would respond to it is I would say for me at this point in my life, it's basically just second nature. And I think for a lot of people, when you get to this point where you've been vegan for 2 years or 5 years or 10 years or even just a few months, it just kind of becomes second nature. It becomes what you do. And you're not really like tempted by these cheeseburgers are tempted by eating this macaroni and cheese or something like that. And I think if someone asks you that, you should acknowledge that there are people in situations that, where it would be very, very challenging if you don't have accessibility to the kind of food that you would want to be eating. Because, I mean, it's like someone that is in a food desert, it's like, yeah, they can be vegan and just eat potato chips all day, and that's not going to be that's not going to lead them into a good kind of situation. I mean, if that's what you want to do, more power to you. But I would not say, hey, you should be vegan at all costs, even if that means just eating like convenience store food all the time.
Paul, that means you have to put "at all costs" as the outro music.
Gotcha.
No one will get it. Yeah, I think you hit the nail right on the head that our approach should vary with people in regards to their situation. And it's, I think that, yeah, if someone was to ask me, is going vegan hard? I say, you know what? Certainly in the beginning, it's a transitional period and you're going to read some labels, and it's not the easiest thing, but I think that you will be surprised at how easy it becomes over time. And the more you do it, the easier it gets. And then depending on the person's life situation, add caveats to that. But I think that, you know, saying something like, I think you will find that it's easier than you think it is, or I always like to acknowledge, I thought it would be really hard. You know, before I just decided to do it, I was like, this is impossible. It sucks. I have to read all these labels and everyone's going to think I'm this weirdo. I mean, everyone thought I was a weirdo anyway, so what does that matter? So I think it's important to acknowledge that, like, there might be some obstacles. And then also super important is, especially if this is like a friend or a family member, someone that's like regularly in your life, is saying, hey, but I am here to help you and guide you along. So I mm-hmm. can help you, you know, get over those hurdles easier because I dealt with this. And so I have advice for you. If you have any questions, if you need recipes, if you need resources, if you're curious how to handle this social situation, I am more than happy to. And that's something that I, on my Facebook, at least like once a year, I'll just make a post and be like, hey, I've been vegan, you know, usually around my vegan anniversary, I'll be like, I've been vegan for 8 years, 9 years, whatever. I feel amazing. I wish I did it sooner. If you have any questions, if you would like to go vegan or incorporate more vegan eating or anything like that, please don't hesitate to reach out to me. And I have had people do that. I've had people email me saying, I've really been wanting to do this. Can you send me some recipe links or something along that line? So I think, you know, extending ourselves in those conversations when people ask if it's hard, I think that offers some relief and lets people feel like they have a little bit of a safety net and they have sort of their own informal vegan mentor available to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if someone showed me that BuzzFeed video that kind of started off the conversation and was like, hey, look, being vegan is hard, I think my easy response would be like, this is like the first day of being vegan. And then that's literally it, because you will find out like if that thing is vegan or not, and then it doesn't become an issue anymore because you know if it's vegan or not. You find out if those fries are vegan or not, and then from there on out you never have to ask that question again. So it's kind of like there is, I guess you would call it like a learning curve, but I feel like you get over that pretty quick, where you're like, okay, now. And that's something that I, not to extend the conversation, but that is something that I feel like people have a misconception about veganism, is that like you will just never be sure if anything is vegan or not. And yeah, it's like I still read labels all the time and it's easy and it doesn't, maybe I shouldn't use the word easy, but and it's, at this point it's second nature to me. But for the most part, it's like you find out if something is vegan or not and then you know it. It's not like you're constantly reading the same labels over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I just had to throw that in there right at the end.
I had some really good tangent to go off on, and now I'm totally blanking, so you're being robbed of my genius.
So let us know what you think. I think that at the very least, the answer to the question, is being vegan easy, is not a blanket yes or no answer. I think there's a lot of nuances in it, and I think it does those nuances injustice if we just say, yes, it is easy, or no, it is not easy, without kind of going into some of those things. So let us know what you think. You can contact us on Instagram, which is just The Bearded Vegans. You can contact us via email, thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. You can respond to the specific episodes on thecommentist.com. Check out The Bearded Vegans over at that website, and check out all the other great podcasts on thecommentist.com. I think it's time to wrap things up. Andy, what have you got going on?
I wanted to add one more thing to the conversation.
No.
Which is, if someone asks you, you can say, for me, it was easy. For me, it was hard. I think people like hearing those personal experiences. When I was doing outreach all the time, I would get questions like, well, how did you go vegan? How long have you been vegan? And so you can speak to your personal experience and then acknowledge that the other person may have a different experience. But you can talk about, for you, what it was like. And that's kind of a way around saying, like, for me, it was really easy because I had this and I had a friend that was already vegan or whatever it might be. So anyway, that's my little tag on the other conversation. I will be at the Western New York Veg Fest in Buffalo, New York this coming weekend, August 7th. I will be at the Vegan Soul Fest in Baltimore, Maryland, one of my favorites, August 20th. And then September 10th, as mentioned at the top of the show, we will both be at VegStock in Millville, New Jersey, with the Compassion Company table, all your vegan t-shirt needs, as well as a live podcast recording. So be sure to come Woo. Out and check those out. Say hi to me. Find me at the table. Give me a high five. Let me know where is good to eat. Tell me about the good mini golf. And then play mini golf with me. Please, for the love of God. I can't play mini golf by myself. I haven't brought myself to that level yet.
Oh, boy. Hey, Andy, I actually have something to announce as well.
Oh, Paul.
So this episode, which will hopefully be coming out August 3rd, the next day, so if you're listening to this episode the day it comes out tomorrow, I will be going down to Indianapolis with the rest of the Roll to Hit crew, which is another podcast that I do on the Commentist Network, which is a Dungeons and Dragons podcast, and we will be at Gen Con, which is like a board game convention in Indianapolis. So if you happen to live in Indianapolis, please let me know, because otherwise I guess I'll just be happy cowing it, but I would love to get some recommendations from people. So, yeah, thank you.
All right, come find us. Paul, you got anything else to say?
I do. We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off.
It's not that easy being green, having to spend each day the color of the leaves, when I think it could be nicer being red or yellow or gold or something much more colorful like that. It's not that easy being green.